Part two of my interview with Dr. Anthony Chafee, we talk about why dairy is damaging your healing and fat loss goals, what alcohol you can consume on the carnivore diet, why coffee is damaging your health, and should you choose high protein or high fat on a carnivore diet. If you'd like support on your carnivore journey, I have a free weekly meetup group. The link is in the description. Another controversy around the carnivore diet is dairy and lactose. What do you think about dairy? Should we be having it? What should we be having?
The dairy that we're using now is, you know, it's mostly pasteurized and homogenized milk and dairy products. And those are just very different things. They're very different things than raw dairy. There are certainly populations like the Maasai and you know, the Mongolians and all these other people that often use dairy. The Mongolians actually particularly use fermented dairy. And actually you would think that they would be, you know, I mean, there are actually, you know, not as many people that are lactose tolerant or intolerant. There's a good mix out in the world. You would think that, you know, the Mongolians, you know, they've been using, you know, dairy products for, you know, millennia, that they would be one of the ones that are lactose tolerant, right? In fact, they're not. They have no lactose tolerance. They're all lactose intolerant, but they all use fermented products. And they use this fermentation process eats up all the lactose. So they never run into it in the first place. So they don't have any carbs in their diet, in their traditional diet. They're just eating meat and fermented, you know, fermented dairy. They obviously traditionally would live on this stuff. And there's, you know, the Maasai that do as well and other populations that do as well. So is dairy just a horrible idea? No, not necessarily. It's an added, you know, weapon in the quiver to, you know, get nutrition and be healthy, just like, you know, plants are on occasion if you're starving. I don't think they're necessarily as good as meat.
Yes.
And, you know, and certainly buying milk from the store now, and it's, you know, it's not fermented, it's, you know, homogenized, it's pasteurized, you know, it's just going to be a very different thing. If you wanted to get like raw dairy, raw cheese, raw yogurt, those things like that, that would be better. I don't think that it's as good. And some people have some problems with them, especially like with the milk proteins. People know about the A1 protein, A2 protein. So they always should get A2 milk or A2, whatever. A2 is less inflammatory, but it's actually still slightly inflammatory. So certainly people with autoimmune issues, they definitely have a problem even with A2 milk. I also see dairy be a bit of a barrier for people with weight loss, that they'll actually even gain weight on it. There could be, well, I mean, obviously if there's some carbohydrates in it, that's going to, you know, kick your body into a fat storing metabolism as opposed to a fat burning metabolism for at least 24 hours. But, you know, even when people are just eating cheese and non, you know, lactose containing dairy, they seem to have that problem as well. There are other things that can be at play. So it's something that I would, if used at all, I would use sparingly and just as a condiment. You know, if you melt some cheese onto meat or mix in some sour cream with some ground beef or something like that for flavor, sure, you know, but I wouldn't just be like eating a bunch of dairy. And if you want really optimal results, probably just skip it altogether, you know, unless you're getting this fermented, you know, yak butter or whatever you want, you know, that might be a little different.
So another question I always get, and for myself as well, coffee with a bit of cream, which yeah, people have every day. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to get over adding that cream to your coffee or even giving up coffee. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts around cream?
More of the problem is adding the coffee to the cream, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's so hard. It's so hard to get rid of the coffee.
Well, it is, but I mean, that's, you know, it's because it's an addictive substance, right? Yeah. But like any addictive substance, you can get over it. You know, it doesn't even take that long. You know, generally the addiction from coffee, as with nicotine, takes about, you know, 2 weeks and then you're over it. You know, and with coffee, you generally get over it a bit quicker, and you have like sort of headaches and withdrawals. You don't feel great for a few days and then you're over it, and then you feel a lot better afterwards. So it's something that can be done. You know, there's a big ritual to it as well. You have that smell, you're getting ready, you have that anticipation. You do feel better on the other side of it. You know, I certainly do. And a lot of people that I've spoken to who have sort of taken that recommendation to just try it and just maybe just come off of it for a couple of weeks or a month and just see how you feel. And then maybe, you know, you can come back on it. And if you see the difference and it's just like, yeah, I can live with the difference, or it doesn't really make much difference for me, or I even feel better with the coffee, like, fine, if that's how you feel. But, you know, give it a shot and test it one way or the other. Everyone I've spoken to that has done that, they've all said like, wow, I feel so much better. I didn't realize like how much better I could feel. And it's difficult to get off of. You know, you can't, it's very hard to stop something addictive if you don't see a good reason to stop it. You know?
Yes. Well, I do have a good reason to stop it because I do feel it gives me a little bit of anxiety, just a little sense of nervousness. And I always think, you know, if I just give it up for a good 30 days, would I feel that much more calmer, relax, function better, sleep better, and even tea as well?
And they're all plants. And so, you know, yes. And the caffeine is addictive, but it will go away. You know, the addiction and the cravings go away fairly quickly. Some people get some headaches, you know, especially if they're big caffeine drinkers or caffeine users, they can get headaches. And, you know, if you drink a ton of water, that can help with headaches. And, but sometimes you just have to sort of, you know, grin and bear it and get through it. And it does go away. It usually only lasts a couple of days.
So cream's okay then?
Yeah, cream's all right. Having a bit of cream every now and then, you know, as a condiment used sparingly is probably, you know, not going to be a problem unless you have you know, specific sensitivity to it or are autoimmune, then you'll be more sensitive to that. But, you know, cream generally doesn't have lactose in it either, but it will have some of the milk proteins as well. You know, some people, you notice they're using sort of heavy cream in different things. And they notice that, you know, then they sort of stall their weight loss and then they stop using the cream and then their weight loss continues. So, you know, I don't think it's just a calories thing. I think there's something more going on there. Could be that, you know, you're not getting complete nutrition from the dairy, but you are getting calories from the dairy, but your brain is saying, oh, well, no, we still need these nutrients that come from meat. And so you end up eating the same amount of meat as you would have otherwise, and you have the dairy as well. It's very difficult for your body to absorb fat past a certain point. So that's less of a concern, but you'll be getting proteins. You'll be getting other things that will be contributing to your caloric intake as well. And certainly, you know, if you're getting more than your body wants, your body is not going to utilize it in the same way and will store it. I mean, that is true, but it's not as simple as calories in, calories out, because our bodies and our metabolisms change dramatically depending on what we eat and how much we eat.
Another question that I do have is around people that follow a carnivore diet, which is high fat, moderate protein. And on those days that they have more protein, they find that their glucose increases and their ketones decrease. So one question I had was, does that mean that they're insulin resistant? And why is their glucose increasing when they have high protein?
Well, it may be that they're insulin resistant. You know, they could be, but I mean, a lot of people are. But, you know, 10% of Americans are diabetic, and then 40% of Americans are pre-diabetic. So that's half the population has some sort of dysregulation of their insulin and insulin insensitivity to some degree or another. But no, you can have, you know, if you look by the glycemic index, you'll see that, you know, protein has, you know, it raises your blood sugar by a certain number. I forget exactly what it is. It's not as bad as that, but it is something. So, you know, when you're eating carbohydrates along with protein, which is, you know, you don't really see in nature outside of milk, really, then you don't see like carbohydrates and protein coming together generally. When you're eating carbohydrates with protein, you get a larger spike from the protein than you do if you're just eating protein on its own without the carbohydrates. You will get a little bit, you'll get a bit of a raise of your blood sugar, which is fine. You know, in keto sort of communities, they say, you know, you'll keep your protein really low because you want to stay in ketosis all the time. I'm not too worried about that because I'm just trying to eat meat and understand that whatever my body's doing, whatever my biochemistry is doing, it's what it's supposed to be doing because I'm eating what I'm supposed to eat. And if I trust that, I should trust my metabolism and my biochemistry to do what it needs to do, whether that stays in ketosis or not, fine. Now, I've literally never checked my blood sugar or my ketones ever in my life since doing carnivore. And for that reason, I, you know, checked my blood sugar just randomly, just for, you know, interest's sake other times. but not for that purpose. And certainly never tested my ketones ever, but I have tested my HbA1c, which is right in the perfect range. Overall, things are fine from that standpoint. However, whatever my body's doing with the amount of protein that I'm eating or not eating, if I'm eating sort of in amounts that my body wants, as going by, you know, the different sorts of metrics, like, you know, by how much fat I'm absorbing, and I sort of gauge it by that. And if I do that, I'm just happy with my body doing what it wants to do. It will likely raise your blood sugar a little bit and pop you out of ketosis transiently, and then you'll come back in. But it's a transient thing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't last very long, because you're not getting this massive spike by eating like a whole bunch of, you know, sugar and candy or bread. It doesn't last very long. It's not like a 24-hour cycle like you get with when you eat carbohydrates. And it could be that this is one of the things that, you know, those other guys were coming into a problem with, is if their insulin wasn't going up a little bit, their blood sugar wasn't coming up a little bit. And so, you know, they weren't getting that regulation in their kidneys or their thyroid, and they were having problems with it. That's one possibility. That's something that Professor Bart Kay, you know, thought might be going on if they're not eating enough protein, you know. And if you're a big, strong, muscular, athletic person using a lot of energy, using a lot of protein, you know, your protein levels are going to be higher than someone else who's smaller and sedentary. And so, you know, for me, if I'm working out a lot, you know, my protein demand will be higher than someone else's. And if I'm not meeting that, then I might get, you know, electrolyte issues or thyroid issues. That's what he was saying. I do find that I'm literally twice as hungry when I'm working out a lot. I will eat twice the amount of meat, you know, so I'll go from, you know, 1 kilo or so to eating like 2+ kilos of meat in a day, sometimes more. If it kicks you out of ketosis, it will raise your blood sugar a little bit. And that may kick you out of ketosis. And that's fine, because it's only going to be transient, and it's what your body's supposed to do anyway. Like, we are meant to eat protein. We are meant to eat fat. Protein comes along with the fat, and, you know, it might pop you out of ketosis. Fine. I wouldn't worry too much about it. I wouldn't try to micromanage your biochemistry. Your biochemistry, it knows what it's doing a lot better than we do, a lot better than any professor of biochemistry knows. Like, it's going through, you know, billions of interactions every millisecond. That's way too complex of a system to try to tinker with.
So if you have a family history of diabetes or hypertension or anything like that, should we still not be testing? Is it still okay to let your body do what it wants to do?
If you have a family history, but you don't have diabetes, then probably not too much use. But if you have diabetes or pre-diabetes and you have some sort of issue, then no, I think it's worth testing your blood sugar anyway, because if you're on medications that require management, then you obviously need to keep track of that in order to titrate your medications, make sure you're not on too much or too little, because, you know, high blood sugar is bad for you. Too low blood sugar is bad for you. So you do have to do that. But once your body heals, or if you're, you know, not, you don't have a problem in the first place, then I wouldn't worry about it really.
Also, with women that are on a carnivore lifestyle, if they want to get pregnant. So we do see women in their late 30s, in 40s, trying to get IVF treatments. Would you suggest, and they're also trying to do carnivore just to try to get pregnant naturally. Would you suggest doing carnivore and stopping fertility treatments?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe in conjunction with that, but I would certainly give carnivore a try. I mean, there's, you know, if we accept the premise that humans are carnivores and eating meat in exclusion of it all else is the most optimal thing we can do for our health, and obviously it's going to be the most optimal thing we can do while we're trying to conceive, and you're going to become as healthy as you possibly can, which is going to give you the best chance of conceiving. Like, even just going into a ketogenic diet, eating more meat and fat and not eating any carbohydrates, really does a number on to help you regulate and fix your hormonal levels, especially for women, to the point that, you know, Dr. Ken Berry tells a story about how he was getting his patients on a ketogenic diet, and these ladies were in their mid-50s. They hadn't had a cycle in 5 years, 6 years. All of a sudden they come in and they're pregnant, and like, what the hell did you do to me? You know,
and like, in their 50s.
In their mid-50s, some of these people had not had a menstrual cycle for 5 years. And then all of a sudden, on their first cycle back, they got pregnant because they weren't using, you know, they didn't know they needed to be careful, you know, and all of a sudden they got pregnant. Bam. At a certain point, your body's not going to be fertile, you know, for men and women, you know, women earlier than men, but it's a lot later than we think it is. And, you know, just simply with eating carbohydrates, when you eat carbohydrates, obviously your blood sugar goes up and correspondingly your insulin goes up. Women don't make estrogen directly. They have to make testosterone first, and then that testosterone is then converted into estrogen in the ovaries. Having high insulin blocks that conversion from testosterone to estrogen. So they get too much testosterone, not enough estrogen. And this is actually a leading cause of PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is the leading cause of infertility in women. It's becoming more and more prevalent. It's more and more difficult for women to get pregnant because they have this. You just stop eating carbs, this goes away for most cases of PCOS. That's a major contributor. You know, Dr. Robert Kiltz is, you know, has one of the largest fertility, you know, clinics and practices in the country. I think he's like the third largest in the US. And he's been carnivore for like 12 years. And he certainly incorporates diet into his treatments for people. And, you know, has, you know, quite amazing results. And, you know, as he talks about, you know, that fertility is a sort of a fundamental level of health. That's one of the first things that goes off, because if you're just not really quite healthy enough, your body's going to say, hey, look, it's not a good time to get pregnant. It's not a good time. It's going to be difficult. We may not be able to bring it to term. You're going to be at risk. You may die, you know, trying to, because you are at a weakened state when you're pregnant, you know, and especially in the wild, when you have pregnant gazelles running away from lions, like you need to be on your feet. Like, you know, if pregnancy just equals death, like no one's here, right? So you have to be pretty damn healthy in order to make that. If you're not quite optimal, you know, well, if you're far less than optimal, your body's going to say, hey, look, we're not doing this right now. That's sort of an early warning sign that maybe you're overall not healthy. And when you do start getting healthy and you start fixing your hormones and fixing your bodies, you know, we do that with fertility treatments. We try to, you know, manipulate hormones because our bodies aren't doing it properly for ourselves, but that's because we're eating the wrong thing, really. And so if you change that and you start eating optimally, your body will start working optimally, your hormones will start regulating themselves optimally, and you won't need any of these medications and treatments. Like maybe some people will, for whatever reason, maybe it's just they've been doing this a long time and, you know, they've just damaged their body to a certain extent, or they have some sort of medical condition, then that's fine. But I think you'll find that most people will be able to conceive naturally if on a carnivore diet. And then most importantly, that fetus, that baby will develop optimally and will not be, you know, have this development curtailed and diminished by eating poison and not getting enough optimal nutrition and optimal nutrients.
A big struggle with a lot of people, they can do carnivore for a bit, but then they go back to what they were eating before. How would you counsel people to go carnivore and to stay carnivore?
Well, I mean, the transition, I mean, you can just sort of let them know what's happening. You know, normally it takes about 2 weeks to get all the junk out of their system. And then after that, you start really feeling amazing. You sort of lose like a lot of water weight early on. You might lose like 5 to 10 kilos, depending on your size, in the first sort of 2 weeks. And people are like, wow, that's amazing. And then all of a sudden it'll peter off after that and you'll change. But maybe people just go like, oh, it's not as dramatic as a result as I used to be getting, and that's discouraging or disappointing. Or, you know, I talked to some people and they've lost like, you know, 40 kilograms in 6 months, and they're like, oh, but it's, you know, it's slowing down. Like I have so much more to lose. Like, what's going on? It's like, okay, how long did it take you to put on those 40 kilograms? Probably a hell of a lot longer than 6 months. And have you ever lost weight that fast in a healthy fashion? No, absolutely not. You know, so, you know, sometimes people get such good results that they want even more, you know, they get sort of addicted to those, that thrill, like you would have like gambling, like, yes, I won, you know? Yeah. And so they want that more and more. But, you know, just to tell them, you know, teach people just to be patient, to be realistic, you know, this is going to take years for their body, you know, to heal all the way, and to get down to an optimal optimal body composition. Some of the things that trip people up is when they just really don't realize just how amazing this is and how much of a benefit it is to their lives, and exactly like how damaging this other stuff is. A lot of people can see the contrast where they sort of slip off, and then they'll see like, wow, that made me feel wretched. And now I go back on, and after like a week, they're feeling good again. They're like, oof, all right, thank God that's over. Some people will slip off and they just go eat rice and be like, oh, well, I guess that's it. I guess I can never do this again. And it's just like, well, no, you can just, you know, do it again. So some people don't realize that you can just, if you mess up, you just get back
on.
Very
straight, you know, back on it. Yep.
That's it. And then, a big one is alcohol. A lot of people end up doing really, really well. And then they're like, oh, but I really like drinking. And so then they'll start drinking, and then they're like, well, if I'm drinking, I'll just like, what's the big deal of doing other things? You know, if you want to drink, you know, that's, you know, and you want to drink every now and then, or even all the time, that's still very different than drinking alcohol and eating all the other crap. And so if you occasionally want to drink, you know, fine, but you know, don't, you know, take all the other mess back in it with you, you know, just because you want to drink every now and then. I like drinking. I really enjoy it. You know, I grew up in a rugby tradition. We drank all the time, like after games and things like that. And, you know, but I just, you know, noticed like when I was, you know, 21, I just felt so much better, you know, not drinking for a month, that I was just like, wow, I'm playing so much better. I'm feeling so much better. I'm recovering so much better. You know, let's see how this goes for the rest of the season. I had the best season of my life. And then next thing I was like, right, I'm just going to keep doing this. So for me, that's easy, but that's not easy as easy for everyone. And that can be something that people trip up in, because they like, oh, they want to have a drink every now and then. If you want to have a drink, have just, you know, spirits, and you'll probably, you know, screw with your metabolism, and you will get problems. Like I get knock-on effects. Like I don't feel as good or have the same energy levels, you know, for a few weeks after I drink, even though I'm not hungover or anything like that. Like there are downstream effects of drinking alcohol that do last, that do stick around for a while, that people don't realize just how much of an effect it's having on their body. But yeah, if you're drinking wine, obviously people love wine, beer, same thing. These have a lot of other things in them that are going to, you know, play merry hell with your system, as, you know, as opposed to the alcohol, which is also going to screw with you a lot, but at least it's not coming with all the other things, you know, say that maybe think about doing that. And then just see how you feel. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, I actually don't have the same energy for, you know, 2 weeks after, 3 weeks after. And then maybe that's not worth it. It's like, for me, even though I enjoy drinking, I enjoy feeling like a superhero all the time, a lot more than, you know, I enjoy, you know, feeling drunk sometimes, you know what I mean? So it's like, I get way more bang for my buck by not drinking, you know, and if occasionally I do want to, it's like a, you know, special occasion. I'm with, you know, friends I haven't seen in a long time, and I just be like, screw it, you know, just go out and do it. That's fine. And I do that, but I pay for it. You know, I'm very aware for the next few weeks, I just don't have the same energy levels. I can't work out as hard. I just kind of feel like, ugh, I just don't feel my best. I don't feel sick. I don't feel hungover. I don't feel any of that. I just don't feel my best. And I like feeling my best. And so that's something that, that I notice. And so that's, for me, it has to be a very good reason to drink. But that's a common one that people slip off for. You don't have to, you can just have your drinks, do that thing, get back on the train, you know?
The social pressure of being carnivore, eating out and being with family and friends, sometimes it's not that you want to have something per se, but you just feel that bit of pressure around being with other people.
Yeah, you certainly can do. Most of that pressure is really put upon ourselves, you know? Like when I first did this, you know, when I started, it's like 20 plus years ago, I didn't even think about it. I wasn't thinking I'm doing a carnivore diet and whatever. So I had nothing to talk about. I had nothing, you know, it's not like it was carnivore or I was vegan or this and that. I was like, oh, well, I'm a vegan. I'm a carnivore. I can do it. You know, it's like, I just didn't think about it in those terms. I was just like, plants are trying to kill me. I'm not going to eat plants. And so, okay, I guess I'll eat these things. And I just didn't think about it. And I just ate those things. And if there was a meal and there was other things, I would just eat the meat. I'd pick out the meat and I wouldn't eat anything else. No one said anything. No one ever said anything, you know, everyone just knew what I was doing. My brother I was living with at the time in Seattle. And I was just like, yeah, I'm just going to eat meat. And like, he didn't, never batted an eye. He didn't question me. He didn't go like, well, that's crazy or this and the other. It was just like, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Then when I was doing this, and I'm specifically doing carnivore because, like, you know, I've just, you know, it's just sort of a different mindset. Then I was going out to eat, and then I was doing these things. I'm like, oh, what do I do? And have to talk about it and bring it up. Like, oh, well, actually I just eat this and whatever it, you know, that was me bringing that on. And then I sort of got more accustomed to it. And now I just do my thing and no one brings it up. I just order what I order. Everyone else orders anything else. And then every now and then someone asks me, he's like, so I hear you only eat meat. Is that right? You know, and then they'll ask me about it. But you know, even at mealtimes, you know, they're like, oh, that's a lot of eggs. Like, oh, that's crazy. You know, you're not getting any bread or anything. I was like, no, I don't really eat that stuff. You know, it's like a 2 second conversation. Like, yeah, I just don't really eat that. And then it goes away. And so, you know, the best thing to do, you know, to get used to that is just to get used to it. Go out more, see people, you know, spend time with people in social settings when they're drinking and you're not, when they're eating things that you're not. And you'll just get used to it. At first, you'll feel a bit self-conscious, and then you'll quickly realize that no one cares and that, you know, you shouldn't either. And if you don't bring it up, 95% of the time, they won't bring it up either. And then you can just, and if they do bring it up, you just go, yeah, I'm just doing this thing. I'm just only eating meat. And that's it. Most people don't care. Maybe they'll ask you about it or be interested in it. Yeah. Occasionally you'll get people sort of challenging you on it, like, well, no, that can't be healthy. Oh, this, that, and the other. And you just, you know, you just, if you, you just sign it off and like, well, this is something that I'm going to try and I feel good. And you know, so I'm just giving it a go. Most people will just sort of, it'll just die off at that point. Or you can engage if you want to, you know, if you feel confident and, you know, learning all the information about, you know, cholesterol and fat and plant toxins and all these sorts of things, and you feel comfortable with that, then you can educate them on it and maybe bring them around to thinking about it as well. But either way, the less you talk about it, the less it's going to be, you know, brought up by people as well. So you can just get used to it. And I would just get people out there. You know, don't sit in a shell, just go out, see people, do things. We put so much stock into like surrounding our social interactions around food and drink. You know, I'm really happy that I'm outside of that, you know, that I don't have to like, just to interact with people. I don't need to like go to breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner, drinks, coffee, all these sorts of things. I mean, I'll go out and meet these people during those things because they still like doing that. And I'll eat what I eat and I'll drink what I drink and they'll do what they do. And I think the main thing that it gives you is it gives you your time. Gives you your time and your freedom back. You're not thinking about, well, what am I going to eat every couple hours? You know, where am I going to go to eat? How am I going to shop? How am I going to plan my meals and meal prep and all that? You know, my meal prep is cutting up a bunch of steaks, putting them on a rack in the fridge. And then once a day, you know, grabbing a steak or two out of the fridge, depending on how hungry I am, and cooking it for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes on each side. That's it. That's my meal prep. And that's all I eat for the entire day. Yeah. So, you know, that's very freeing and I don't have to spend so much time and so much, you know, effort and energy trying to, you know, surround myself with meals and restaurants. And again, my social interactions are actually just social, you know, they don't have to revolve around food.
Anthony, how can people find you?
My main thing is my YouTube channel is just Anthony Chafee MD. And I also have a corresponding podcast called The Plant Free MD, and that's on Spotify, Apple, and then I'm on Instagram as well.
Thank you for your time, Anthony, and I hope to catch up with you soon.